Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kerry Stevenson, talking today to Paul Bibby. He's the Managing Director and CEO of Acora Resources. The ASX code is AKO. Who are Acora? Well, they are they listed 15 months ago. They've got an iron ore project in Madagascar. We're going to find out all about the value accretion that they're doing over in Madagascar, the ease of getting into production over there, and what they've announced recently, which is a maiden resource. Paul Bibby, welcome to Small Caps. Great to see you.
No, thank you, Kerry. And I appreciate you catching up when we made our announcement on Wednesday about that first part of the maiden resource. It's only the first half so far. And pleased to be with you today. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Look, before we get started, this is the first time that you've addressed our audience. So first up, give us a brief overview of Acora Resources, and then we'll get into the detail of this maiden resource.
Certainly. So Acora Resources has iron ore tenements in Madagascar. The project we're focusing on is Bekisopa. And in the 15 months since listing, we've now drilled 6,000 metres of diamond core holes along the 6-kilometre strike in what's been a pretty tough time for everybody during COVID. We've successfully completed that. Had all the assays done at ALS in Perth, the Iron Ore Centre. And as we mentioned last Wednesday, the first part of our resource was announced at 84.5 million tonnes with more to come in the coming weeks.
Paul, I'm just curious. Madagascar is not something that I, and I'm sure some people out there, would associate with iron ore mining. Most of us associate it with West Australia and other parts, you know, maybe some Brazil, but Madagascar. How did you come across this project and what's it looking like?
Yeah. Look, we initially got tenements on the east coast of Madagascar, very much upgradable iron ore. We then acquired Bekisopa in 2014 from a Canadian company that was focused on coal, not iron ore. So we've acquired that from them. And they have continued to maintain shares in our company because they believe there's a really good project here. It just wasn't their priority. So since then, we've been sort of building the company, getting ready. And we raised money, you know, two or more years ago so that we could list and progress the project. And the attraction for me, certainly, at Bekisopa was the high-grade outcropping rocks. That indicated that there was something substantial there. And over the last 15 months with the drilling program, that's been proven to be true. We're seeing iron ore, significant formations, 70 to 150 metres true thicknesses to depths of at least 300 metres so far, and high grades on surface with the outcrop, but in the weathered zone, 64 to 68%. So DSO potential and an ideal way to start up a project.
And for those out there that wanted to, what is DSO? That's direct shipping ore. This is what you're saying is this is going to be very easy to mine. Explain the process that you need to go through. And is that the project behind you?
This is one of the shots that I use. You can see some pretty big rocks there. The rock chip samples for those sort of rocks is 66.7%, almost as big as that four-wheel drive, but also smaller sizes along the ground. DSO, direct ship ore, means the grade is in specification. So benchmark grade is 62% iron. And okay, all that is required basically is to conventional mine, shovel, truck, crush that to size, which is, you know, 32 millimetres, 35 millimetres for lump ore, and ship that to the customer. So not a lot of processing. And we know from operations that produce DSO, they're low capital cost, low operating cost operations. And that's one of the beauties here compared to other similar projects is we have a substantial amount of the DSO, which will enable us to get started at a low capital cost, high margin, which can then return money to shareholders, but also fund any further capital to progress and build the business.
One of the things about that got my attention just then was low capex, high margin. Can you just expand on that a little bit, Paul?
Okay. Look, it's too early for me to say what our operating costs will be.
Sure.
But let's just assume it's in the middle range of the operating costs of all those that produce iron ore today. So a number like $50. The 62% iron price at the moment is $150. So the margin is $100 per every ton. So for a 2 or 3 million ton operation, which is something that an organization like ours could handle as a startup, that potentially $200 million of revenue. So that is sufficient to make a very good return to shareholders, but also invest in additional equipment to grow the operating volume without having to get into debt or raise funds from shareholders. So
nice. We don't like dilution. So that's actually good. So you're looking at this as you could get this into production. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, it's not tomorrow, because I know sometimes I get questions from people, Paul, that say, what's the pathway to production? Will they be in production next year? No. We're still in the process of the maiden resource, and there's more to come with that.
That's right.
But in terms of this low capex, high margin, that's very good for shareholders. But what I also want to know is Madagascar is not a place that many people know. Is the government supportive? And out of those costs, what is the government going to be looking at?
Yeah. Look, Madagascar isn't known to many. I understand that. Certainly not for mining. However, there are some significant players already in Madagascar. Rio Tinto's there with their Fort Dolphin project, a massive ilmenite project. The Japanese Sumitomo's there. Correz is there with their nickel laterite project. I think that was an $8 billion project. So a significant operation. And the benefit for us has been that they have trained up many people that have then gone on and started businesses, and we're using that experience to progress our operation, something that wouldn't have happened 10 years ago. So that's been beneficial. Mike Davies, I think many people in the mining industry would have heard of Mike Davies, Xstrata. He has a project looking for graphite, the battery metal graphite in Madagascar. And Madagascar's been well known for graphite. The French were mining that over the last 60 years or more. So there are opportunities. There is gold in Madagascar as well.
Oh.
Now, then you spoke about supportive government. Look, during our exploration program last year, we had a visit from the mining ministry, and they were very encouraged. They saw us to be a professional organisation, and were very complimentary of us. So that was good. The other thing is, typically in mining jurisdictions, the state federal government royalties are numbers like 7% for iron ore. And that, if you've got a good project, you can wear that, and you should wear that to give money back to the community and society. In Madagascar at the moment, it's 2%. And they've got discussions in the parliament to double that to 4%, and totally supportive. If you have a good project, a 4% royalty is a sensible thing, and a project like ours could well and truly wear that, and we'd be happy to pay that. It's certainly better than 7%, which is what's happening in possibly Australia and elsewhere around the world.
Yes, it's 7% over in WA. But that would, that's, I guess, if they are looking to go from 2 to 4%, that's wearable, as you said, for you.
Yes.
But it's also very, very good for Madagascar as a country. So I'm assuming if this gets passed, there'll be even more support for your project going forward, because they can see that there's going to be some money coming
that's
in
right.
to support them.
Yes. Yeah, exactly right. The government needs to see the benefit from these projects so they can get behind companies and encourage them to progress and develop. So previous arrangements have been more complicated, and the government hasn't necessarily seen the money flowing as readily. So, having a 4% royalty that's just a flat, obvious number is beneficial. It helps us, the community. It's a very poor country, Madagascar.
Is it?
People there are very keen to improve their standard of living. We've employed, master's graduates in geology to do work for us. Super enthusiastic. They want companies like us there so they can have good jobs. And, you know, money flows into these communities to help them. One of the community projects, I don't know if you want to, weren't looking for this answer, but we last December completed a water well for one of the nearby villages, 25 kilometres away. So we dug a water well, put in a water tank on a stand, and distributed, you know, clean, fresh water to the village for the first time ever. So they were
first time ever.
Well, they were taking the water from the rice fields to be their water, you know. So they didn't have water like we have out of our tap. So that was something they asked for, and that was what we delivered in December of last year with the Catholic Church that have a program doing that. And it went super well, and they were just so pleased. And they're the things that a company like us can do in a country like Madagascar and get the community support. And it was very nice.
Oh, congratulations. I think that's wonderful. And you know, that's what we don't realise. You know, we sit here in Australia, as you say, get water out of the tap, and they've been getting it from the rice field. So well done. I think that's wonderful. Let's just talk a little bit more about your maiden mineral resource, which was announced. We're talking towards the end of March. Just if people are watching this in a few months' time, this is March 2022. So the maiden mineral resource was 84.5 million tonnes. Talk us through the numbers of that and how that let us understand a little bit more the cost structure and how that's going to be.
Okay, so we've got three drilling grids along the 6 kilometre strike, and we've called them simply North, Central and South. We've announced the resource for the North and Central areas, which are the two smaller areas. They combined are 84.5 million tonnes, so basically 40 million tonnes in each of the North and Central zones.
Okay.
The Southern zone, we were waiting on a couple of extra assays before the resource geologists could complete that. They've now been submitted. So in the next, maybe 2 weeks, the southern zone where there's 37 drill holes will be reported. And we expect that to be equal to the resource we announced the other day. The resource H&S is saying that it's between 50 and 100 million tonnes. So my expectation is it's in the higher side of that 50 to 100 million tonne resource. So potentially we could see 150, 160 million tonne resource, maiden resource for Becky Soper. Because our project has both magnetite and hematite, at surface in those outcropping rocks in the weathered zone, but predominantly magnetite at depth, the product is proven by doing the Davis tube tests. And our product has graded 67.6% iron when it's upgraded by that test at a 75 micron size. So 75 microns is fine, but it's coarser than pretty well any other project that's currently operating or looking to be developed. So that also means potentially if we go down that track to produce that product after the DSO, that the operating costs and the capital costs will be less relative to others. So that's also a good point of difference. Now, why is the 67 plus percent iron product relevant? That is what the steel industry needs today, but certainly in the future as they progress to a green iron and steel world to decarbonize, reduce their carbon emissions, eliminate coking coal from the process using natural gas and potentially hydrogen, which we've heard a lot talked about of recent times. To do that, yes, you need hydrogen, but you also need a higher quality iron ore product. And at Becky Soper, we've proven we can deliver that. And we're seeing grades from 67 to 70% iron from those trials.
Why do you need a higher grade product to make it greener? I'm just curious, what's the process and why?
As a metallurgist, I should understand that totally, but there's some nuances there which I haven't put my mind to. So coking coal, you've got the carbon in the coking coal extracts the oxygen from the iron ore. So iron ore is 62% iron with, 25, 30% oxygen. So you need to remove that oxygen. So they're going to replace the coking coal, which becomes CO2 in the atmosphere after it's been reacted in the blast furnace, with hydrogen. So you don't have those greenhouse gases being produced. So you don't have as much reduction gases Therefore, you've got to start with a higher grade iron, less oxygen and less impurities, because you haven't got that reduction driving force, I believe, to make a high quality iron and steel product.
Okay, so you've got a good product there. I want to go numbers, because I've got an investor audience out there. Now, your market cap at the moment, I think, is in the low 20s, around 20, 23 million. Let's just say, let's call it for argument's sake, about 20 million market cap. You listed 15 months ago. Was that at 20 cents?
We listed at 25 cents, 25. And we're currently at 38. So done pretty well in the 15 months. I think we're up, what's that, 50 something percent. So we've done, I believe, very well. We've had good results and good news flow. So that's been pretty good.
Okay, well, if we do the numbers off that maiden resource, say that it's approximately 60, 70 cents Aussie per tonne.
Expiration tonne in the ground, yes.
Yeah. Yep. You've got 84, 85 million tonnes.
Yes.
That's about $59 million in ground.
That's what the math says.
Yes. And your market cap is about 23 mil. So there's a disconnect there, would you say?
Yeah, I would say so. So I think one of the ways to value a company like ours is the cost per expiration tonne in the ground.
Okay.
And while that figure might vary between the lows and the highs of the iron ore price cycle, using a number like you said, 60 or 70 cents Australian, is realistic, I believe. Others have used that. That would say for the 84 million tonnes of a resource we announced at the end of March, last week, that our market cap should be $59 million. So double what it is today.
Okay.
So yes, there is a disconnect. Yes.
And then when you bring in the Southern Zone, look, I'm not putting words in your mouth here, but I'm just trying to understand where the value, because for me, it's all about the investment thesis and getting people to go, okay, it's almost back of the envelope stuff here with this iron ore project, wouldn't you say? Because if you bring the Southern Zone in, and let's say that's about 160 mil, then we're talking about 100, 110 mil, or as you like to say, I think you like the number 111, don't you?
I like the number 111. I like some symmetry in numbers, so 111 is a good number. Yeah, look, if it all comes together as we expect, and the north, central, and southern zones adds up to 150 or 160 million tonnes at 60 or 70 cents, like you're using, that means $111 million value for the iron ore in the ground. Okay, so that's four times where our present market cap is. And we hope to announce that southern resource in the coming week. So there is a disconnect. And we need to help.
Do you think that's partly due to Madagascar? Because one of the things I wanted to ask you was, with Madagascar, not brilliant on geography, but where are your customers? Because one of the challenges at the moment in this new world is the cost of shipping.
Cost of shipping, absolutely. And look, people say iron ore is a logistics activity, you know, from the mine to the port, the port to the customer.
Yeah.
So from the port of Madagascar that we'd be looking at on the west coast of Madagascar, our nearest customers are the Middle East and India. India has plans to grow their iron and steel business significantly from several hundred million tonnes to 700 million tonnes per annum, making them a very significant iron and steel producer in the world. The Middle East is a target for us because they have abundance of natural gas from the oil operations, and that's what is used to convert the high-grade iron ore into iron and steel. So the 67%, that's already happening now with the pellets operations. So they're near neighbours to Madagascar. So the shipping cost potentially for a product out of Madagascar at Bekisopa is going to be relatively low compared to most who are shipping long distances into China and Japan and Asia and elsewhere around the world. So we've got some near neighbours with the Middle East and India, and potentially could go further. So there should be a shipping cost advantage as well from Madagascar.
Absolutely, and that's pretty exciting. We are running out of time, but it's very exciting times for you. The pathway to production, you know, that's further down the track, isn't it? That's like 3-4 years. Do you see that as any hurdles as you go along, or are you pretty confident that this is going to get into being a mine?
Look, hurdles will always be there, and it's for people like us to identify them and overcome them. Now that we've proved up the resource, we're in a position to do some scoping studies and start those, some of those studies, which we've got planned for this year. So firstly, the logistics, you know, mine to port, port infrastructure, you know, where is the best place for us to send our product to? What will be the mining and processing activities? What is the magnitude of that? What potentially is the dollars and the people numbers, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got those studies planned for this year, and that will give us a very good indication of the way forward in the next sort of 6 to 9 months and the cost for doing that as well.
Well, Paul, we're going to get you back on again because there's a lot going on. You've been a busy company in the 15 months since you've listed, and shareholders are getting value from there. Everyone knows I like to finish off my conversations with three reasons why they should be sitting up and taking notice. So, Paul, over to you for the last word.
The last word. Okay. So, look, I think we've touched on them and expanded on them in our discussion this morning, which has been wonderful. The thing that differentiates Ecora's iron ore project from others is it's a low capex, high margin startup because of the DSO that will become a mine. So that, I think, is the first point to make notice of. So low capex, high margin. The second one is our near neighbours and our near customers are India and the Middle East, like we just spoke about. So therefore, we have the opportunity for low shipping costs relative to others. So the cost to get that product to our customers is going to be lower. We've proven we've got the quality, so we're going to have the demand, I believe, for our Becky Soper project material. And the third one is our capital, our market capital at $20 million is undervalued. There's lots of upside. We've got the Southern Zone to be announced soon. And, you know, I believe that there really is an opportunity for people to get involved with Ecora now and ride the next wave, which should be quite exciting.
Paul Bibby, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today. And also congratulations on helping Madagascar, which is a very poor country, to benefit from what you're doing over there. And the first one was that clean water well that you did. And I think that is marvellous. As I said at the start, ladies and gentlemen, the ASX code is AKO. Check them out. And lots of news to come. A nice, simple operation, as Paul said, low capex, high margin, and they're just getting on with the job. Paul Bibby, thanks for joining me on Small Caps today.
Appreciate it, Kerry. And thank you, everybody, for your support.